You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 25th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Time Magazine's 1 billion most influential people, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I think we were a billion and one.
Yeah, we were close. We're close. Now, if they did the most influential podcasts,
yeah,
we'd still be, you know.
We'd still be down there.
Yeah.
Although our Stitcher ranking in news and politics is pretty good.
Yeah.
I think we're number 49 on Stitcher.
We will always seek out the rating that most favorably
reflects us. Yes.
Us.
So true. No one could have predicted.
Yeah. Oh, God. This is such a... And I know you want to get to sort of...
I want to get to...
Why this one makes everybody...
This one made
angry.
Me so mad.
Yeah, but...
But go ahead.
Yeah,
Tell us what happened with...
This is
now
part
you taught me a new word this morning. Cliven.
Clavern.
Clavern. Clavern. I'm sorry. Clavern.
Clavern is a unit of the Ku Klux Klan. Like a platoon or a team. It's a small subunit of the Klan. And it turns out... as we reported last week in Moochers of the Purple Sage, I didn't know that would be part one because I thought this asshole
we
would just
we were
go
done
away.
With this asshole, but yeah. No.
No. This is because...
He opened his mouth again.
Well, Sean Hannity adopted him as his new daddy.
Right.
He's my new daddy. Look at my new... Isn't he a hero? Mm-hmm. He carries around a sign, you know, carries around a little picture of George Washington in his pocket, the big cowboy hat. He's got his, you know, I don't know, weird inbred children next to him talking about oppression and tyranny. And he's got a whole bunch of crazy wingnuts with rifles lined up around him pointing guns at federal agents in a deliberately threatening way, which I thought you went to prison for in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure about that, but it makes me long for domestic drone policy.
Oh, see, I knew you were going to go that route.
Yeah. Yeah,
I knew with all of your hatred of Glenn Greenwald and your obsession with Glenn Greenwald.
My obsession.
You really wanted American citizens to be attacked by drones.
Of course I did.
Drone glass.
The wrong ones. You know, this is, I just want them to scoop up reporters and put them in Supermax prisons like they do now just normally. Because you know that most reporters...
come back to the United States?
Well, even if they're in the United States.
We're getting off topic here.
But
so you're calling him Clavern Bundy.
Yeah, Clavern Bundy, apparently.
Rancher who wants to feed his cattle for free, right?
He wants to wave the American flag and cite the Second Amendment and pretend and says...
And have food stamps, basically federally funded food for his cows.
But says the United States government doesn't exist.
Right.
He says, citing the amendment to a constitution has no belief in, and waving a flag that he apparently, you know, he's obviously waving the wrong flag.
We've been calling him on all of this bullshit for a week now.
Yeah, yeah, and this is just the reason this is so hilarious and exhausting is that the minute this asshole opened his mouth, everything that happened afterwards was completely predictable. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a swarm of gun-toting yahoos talking about tyranny that arrive at his moocher ranch to protect him. He will be adopted by Fox News as a cause because freedom and tyranny and stuff. And of course,
But not by Glenn Beck. Everybody, he made Glenn Beck look sane.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck has actually collected grazing money from his property and thinks it's perfectly normal.
Yeah. Well, because he pays taxes. He is subject to those rules.
Right.
And therefore they are, you know, perfectly reasonable rules because he's part of the structure. But of course, because Fox News made him a star and made him a cause celeb, made him a hero of the people with a Reagan cluster, you know, they made him a star. And so it fell to, I think, Adam Nagorny from the New York Times decided, well, I'll stick a microphone in front of him, see what he says. And as sure as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, this gun-toting, tyranny-hating, mooching, white trash asshole opened his mouth and decided, well, as long as I have a platform, might as well hold forth on what I think of the Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
And he just lit into it. And that's what appeared on the New York Times today. This is, of course, this is after he's been made a cause. Like I said, he's been adopted. He's been held up as a shining example of American patriotism. And all these fake patriots with their fake patriotic slogans and their very real bullets decided to make him their adopted daddy. He decided to open up and talk about how the Negroes, they abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. Bundy was quoted as saying.
Mm-hmm. And this is him saying this. This is not made up on Wonkette.
No.
I quote Wonkette a lot on this podcast, but this isn't from Wonkette. This is from Clavern Bundy.
Yeah. And as I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton and having a family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy? They did get no more freedom. They got less freedom. Mm. Now, let's be clear. Clavern Bundy is the guy that the Republican Party reinvented itself in order to attract.
Right.
He is exactly the guy they wanted. They rebuilt the entire party of Lincoln, turned it into the party of Jefferson Davis, and now they have a little wannabe Nathan Bedford Forrest out there waving a flag and talking about tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they wanted. This is what they spent years and billions of dollars engineering their party to capture. And now that he showed up in their midst and opened his pie hole and started talking about just scratch one of these guys and underneath you're going to find a fucking Klansman every goddamn time.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's most hilarious about this, I suppose, is its complete predictability.
Mm-hmm.
It required no more brains than the average cicada has to take it from A to B to C to D. And right, and that train's always going to travel right through hate radio and Fox News every time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I'm so mad about this is I've really gotten to the point where enough. This saturated me today.
Yeah.
And it saturated me in a way that I'm done pretending to be just a white ally of African Americans, because that's not enough.
No.
We have to come to the struggle. And I want to read this email that Deborah Nesbitt sent. I have her permission to read it.
Okay.
It was part of a forum discussion, but I wrote her separately and asked her if I could read this on the
air. You want to tell people who she is?
Yeah, she writes for Crooks and Liars, and she is African-American, very good writer. And I'm always impressed, and I don't mean that in a white way. I'm not doing her any favors.
No.
I learned something from her today, and I want to share this. Someone on this forum asked, you know, I can't possibly, as a white person, figure out how this bullshit is going on in America.
Uh-huh.
And Deborah wrote, when you say you don't understand it from either side, do you mean from the side of black people and the side of racists like Bundy? If so, it seems to me you understand it just fine. She's speaking basically to white liberals.
Right. Make sure I understand. She means if you can't understand how the hell this is still going on.
Yeah. No, you understand it just fine.
Yeah.
If you mean you don't understand how someone like Bundy can be a racist without even knowing it, and how a bunch of white men in power, who obviously should know better, can hold him, a guy like Bundy, as a paragon of patriotism and rational thought, why wouldn't they?
Exactly.
He is their voice. He is saying all the things they have to pretend to condemn but really uphold. Why wouldn't they broadcast his message far and wide? You would be surprised, this is still Deborah, you would be surprised how many white people don't express that sense of outrage.
Uh-huh.
The best you can do is actually not that bad. Don't stay silent. Be mad. Say you're mad. Say why you're mad. Even better, say it to other white people. Write about it. Good luck with that, though. That can be a dangerous position to take.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's good enough. You don't have to be the one getting your ass kicked to know that it hurts. But I promise you, if you tell enough white people how you feel, you will come to know that hurt quicker and more sharply than you ever thought possible. Then you won't be sitting on the sidelines anymore. You'll be smack dab in the middle of the struggle. This is me talking now, Blue Gal.
Uh-huh.
I'm tired of being one of the good ones when it comes to white people. I'm tired of Sean Hannity being of my race. He is not of my race. I'm done being that saying, well, we're not all like that.
Yeah.
White culture is the problem. White supremacy in America is the problem.
Yes. Yep.
And
always has been.
White trash in this country is the problem. And whether it's on Facebook or at church or at school board meetings or whatever, we need to stand up. And I'm going to be that bitch who stands up and says, enough. I don't want to hear that you're one of the good ones or you have a black friend. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. We allow in this country for Fox News to be called Fox News and pretend that it's a network. And they are given seats at the White House to ask questions. Enough. As long as that's going on, we need to stand up against it. And I said to you earlier today, I'm going to go Samuel L. Jackson on their ass.
Right.
Say liberty one more time, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Say freedom one more time. Go ahead. Because you don't know the beginning of it. And I'm just, I kept thinking when I first heard that this morning, what he said, and knowing that in his gut, in the soles of his shoes, he believes that he's wishing only the best for black people.
Sure.
Because, you know, they just get abortions and go to jail. They don't really care. They'd be better off. So, of course, I just want them to be better off.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard that, I thought of the movie Witness. Do you remember that with Harrison Ford?
Barely.
Not a race movie, but At the end of that movie, spoiler alert, Harrison Ford doesn't have his gun, and they're coming for him. The bad cops are coming for him. And the way, I mean, he does kill one of them with a gun from another one. But his gun is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And they arrange it so that the Amish people in that movie surround him. And they aren't armed either. But they are armed with virtue. And they are armed with the truth. And they know that Harrison Ford is being lied about.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks up at the guy with the gun and says, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot me? You're going to shoot me in front of all these people who know the truth about you and the truth about me? Enough. And that's how I feel today. It's just like, this is, and I, now I'm about to say, this is black and white.
Uh-huh.
This is good and evil. This is good and evil.
Yeah, it is.
And if we don't call out the evil of Sean Hannity and white media, and inside the Beltway, we just accept that the news media has a profit center, and therefore we have to make everybody, including the Clive Bundys of this world, happy with what we say on the TV.
Uh-huh.
Enough!
And I agree.
That's what I'm going to do. I hope I was passionate enough.
I will definitely hold your purse when you do that.
But I've been saying it to other white people, and that gives me, Deborah gave me an answer to my question a few weeks ago about whether to change the church from within or to stay with the church. Because I'm going to be that bitch who stands up and says, Fox News is not in keeping with the teachings of the United Methodist Church.
Yeah.
And
well,
if you say it is, I'm out of here. If that's what it comes down to, well, you know, we like to help people in Africa.
I believe
therefore,
that's true.
Therefore, we're good race. I have black friends.
Uh-huh.
And you go home and watch Sean Hannity? Enough. I'm done.
Well, as your husband said, misquoting Lincoln many years ago,
mm-hmm.
We cannot survive permanently half box and half free.
Right. Exactly.
We are going to become one thing or the other, but we can't do both.
And this goes right into, and I almost hate to step away from specifically talking about race, but it's all of a piece.
Yeah.
Going back again to Chris Hayes.
Yeah.
And Chris Hayes saying, oh, well, we all share this country.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have people on who think differently from me and learn from them.
Yeah.
Really? You're going to have Clavin Bundy on your show?
Clavern.
See, I'll never get this right.
And you shouldn't. It's
Craven. I want to call him Craven Bundy.
Well, and he'll be gone. Here's the thing.
His 15 minutes is up. I mean, yeah.
Hang on to Chris Hayes, because I want to come right back to him. But the thing that really makes me just seemingly angry is that we know how this was going to play out right up to this point. We know how it'll play up right to the end.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be radio silence on the right. Now that it turns out that he is everything that a liberal would have told you he was.
Yep.
Now that he's proven our point for the umpteen zillionth time, there will be some disavowals. There'll be some backpedaling. There'll be a lot of white noise. You know, just let's talk
Nina
about
Lash
Benghazi.
Says, well, you know what he was really saying. He was inelegant about it, but he hasn't had any media training.
Uh-huh.
What she means is he doesn't own a dog whistle.
Right.
He said in his outside voice what all of us know better than to say.
Well, this is what I call the tribe that rubs shit in its hair. That don't they sit around their dank little universe comparing, swapping horror stories about imaginary liberals and what the Negroes do, and essentially rub shit in their hair all day long. And it gets stinkier, and year after year, it gets smellier and more awful. And they don't know it stinks because the only people they ever associate with believe exactly what they do. And then they wander out in the sunlight and wonder why normal people run in horror from them. Because this is just their normal vocabulary. This is how they talk out, you know, among themselves. And so to be on TV or radio, you have to have that off switch. You have to know how to speak in code. And Clive and Bundy does not know how to speak in code. That's what makes him an embarrassment. He's the one who proves the liberals were right about these people all along. So because that is an unacceptable media narrative, we're going to go through a few days or a week or whatever of white noise, of distractions, of talking about everything but this. And when you own your own media empire, this gets back to Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes' fantasy that we have to hear all these voices, because I want to hear from people who disagree with me, who believe climate change is not true. Chris, they have their own fucking television network.
Yep.
They have their own network of radio stations that dwarfs anything liberals do. They have their own newspapers. They own their own magazines. They own their own satellites. They have their own fucking church. They don't need you to explain them to us.
Mm-hmm.
We already, if you live anywhere other than outside the Beltway, you're saturated with this shit all day long.
Right.
Nobody needs us to have you explain them to us, Chris. You need to explain to the rest of the world why they're wrong. And ceding half your airtime to people who are flagrantly wrong, and everyone knows they're wrong.
Not only that, but are being paid. The purpose of them going on your show is that they've already written the blog post. You know, she owned Chris Hayes on his own show.
They got you.
They got you. And the blog post is written before they appear on the air.
Right. You're there. It's,
and the tribe that rubs shit in their hair will believe that she owned you.
Right.
That conservative owned you. The minute that blog post comes out, there'll be a lot of attaboys and attagirls all over Fox News and all over the Koch brothers' offices and all over every place else, because the purpose of them going on is not to have a reasonable discussion with you.
And since at some level you already know this.
You know that.
What really are you doing?
Yeah.
What's really going on?
Because now maybe you are driving ratings and clicktivist hits on your website. If that's what you're doing, that's what you're doing.
Yeah. But shut up about, we need to hear from these people. We've been hearing them for 40 years.
Yeah.
We've been drowning in them for 40 years. Don't ask a drowning man what water tastes like, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Give us a breath of fresh air and a piece of dry land to stand on. That would be a public service. Other than because if I want to listen to this shit, all I have to do is change the channel. And you know what? You keep doing this, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yep.
Because I really don't want to hear from them anymore. They have nothing left to say. But this is what's going to happen. A week or so, or however many days of white noise, a lot of loud, distracting stories, Benghazi stories, Fast and Furious stories, anything to stop talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to get back to Barack Obama plays the race card. Why do you liberals make everything about race? You know, I think you're the real racist. And then we're back to a place where David Brooks feels comfortable.
Yep.
And
yep.
David Gregory feels comfortable. I'm waiting for the David Brooks column to explain how really both sides are really kind of to blame for this. And maybe the fault is really with the Woodstock generation. It could be that way back in the 1960s, blah, blah, blah.
But now you're doing it. You're letting our listeners hear David Brooks.
Yes. Well, I'm telling you what. The David Brooks mind
it's
of the
so
Republican
predictable.
Party is
it's
absolutely
so predictable.
And that's the problem. We can see the tanks rolling in. We have nothing in our arsenal to stop them. We have a few tools, one of which is people like Chris Hayes. But Chris Hayes is like, no, come on. Let a few tanks in just to see what they're like, you know, just to engage them. They don't want to engage you. Chris, go read Stephen Gilliard's column from 10, 15 years ago about, I'm sorry, 10, 12 years ago, about why he's a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
He's very clear. I don't want to debate these people. Mm-hmm. I want to destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to drive them back into the political sewer from whence they came. And they don't want to engage with you. They want to beat you into a corner. They're not interested in anything you have to say. It doesn't matter how many facts you put in front of them. They're never going to change their mind because they never have. And you already know that. So once you wrap your head around the fact that they're never going to give up and they're never going to change their mind and they're never going to listen to you no matter how clever you are, you start thinking about them in a very different way. Mm-hmm. You start thinking of them as a pest to be eradicated, politically and socially eradicated, right. rather than a person to be engaged, because they're never going to engage you. So how do you mitigate the damage they're hellbent on doing? How do you provide a prophylactic around them until they age out of the system and go away in a way that makes it possible for the rest of us to live our lives? And the one way that we have proven for 30 years doesn't work is by putting them on fucking television.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So stop it, Chris.
And this is all of this is happening during the week that the Supreme Court decides that affirmative action isn't necessary anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they can go learn to pick cotton.
Sure.
Tony Scalia.
Well, Tony Scalia also said, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the context is, but when he said, you know, if they raise your taxes too much, maybe you should revolt.
Oh, yeah. He told the law students that. He was speaking to a group of law students. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, this is just mm-hmm. typical. This is you are in a I think this is Carl Sagan's metaphor or someone else before him, but you are in a basement full of gasoline that you put there. Mm-hmm. You created this right-wing paranoid frenzy that you keep your readers and listeners poked into, always whipped up, always terrified, heavily armed, looking for the next liberal commie to blame for all their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Create this pool of gasoline, and then you're just flicking matches into it. And you flick a match, and why don't you have a revolt? And you flick another match, and you flick another match, and one day soon, someone's going to blow up another building.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's going to go on a shooting spree. Someone's going to take out some federal employees.
Yeah, well,
and
that
then you're going to say, "Oh,
in defense of Bundy's cattle." These, and this is really important to remember, that the federal agents of the Bureau of Land Management, who, you know, I'm not saying they're saints. I'm not saying they haven't unjustly pushed people off their land over the uh-huh. course of the American history.
Yeah, but this is pretty clear cut.
They are the officials and the agents from the Bureau of Land Management who are there to get these cattle, the freeloading cattle off of the federal land, are doing so purely in obedience to a court order.
Yes.
They are doing this because a federal judge said, this is the punishment. We're going to round up his cattle. This is the punishment. After 3 or 4 or 5 different times in court, every time he's lost.
And after decades of not paying his bills,
right,
of mooching off the public.
And his argument in court apparently is that this land doesn't belong to the federal government. It belongs to the state of Nevada. And
right.
The state of Nevada has not sued.
Right.
Not once.
No.
Have they come to Mr. Bundy's defense and said, oh, that's right.
That's right. We forgot about that.
You can eat all, their cows can eat all they want. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Well, I'm waiting for the day when some goof shoves a gun in Sean Hannity's face and liberates his wallet
yeah.
in the name of Clive Bundy and freedom. Because that's exactly what he's doing. He's using a threat of force, threat of violence against legal authority
yeah.
to steal from the American people.
Yep, he's a thief.
And he's being applauded for it. And he was applauded for it right up until he did the stupid thing and opened his mouth and started talking about the Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is now, that and since that
and is... And I guarantee you, tonight on Hannity, the IRS,
yeah.
Benghazi.
Yeah, they're making special font big enough to distract, you know, the meat sticks away from the fact that their most recent hero has collapsed. And this is why, again, this is why it is so important to be active and engaged, but it's also important to understand that there is an absolute default setting in our media narrative that when we tick away from it in any direction, remember, these are the same people, the same heavily armed, America is a fascist state, the government doesn't exist, the president is a monster, who 6 years ago, we're shrieking, we're keening that to say a bad word about George W. Bush, the greatest president in America, was tantamount to treason. How dare you? How dare you say a mean thing about George W. Bush, especially while we're at war? What kind of traitorous, monstrous, evil liberal douchebag would say something mean about a president, especially when the nation is in such danger? And then the black guy's elected and the switch gets flipped in their head and they become exactly the opposite of what they had said they were, which is exactly what happened at the end of the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
The switch gets flipped and suddenly obedient, blind fealty to the guy in the White House is the order of the day. And anybody who doesn't agree with that must be wrong. The thing that's freaky is you know the conservatives are this way. They're authoritarian. You know that they're going to have a party line change. Once the guy in the White House changes parties, they will completely reverse everything they've said, everything they've sworn by, everything they've sworn on the lives of their children they believe in one day, and no one will say a word about it. That's the part that's so freaky. Yeah. Not the fact that they do it, because this is what fascists do. It's the fact that nobody else says anything about it except a bunch of dyspeptic liberals who look with alarm and point and say, why the fuck isn't anybody noticing this except us? Why the hell is this a thing that you're not allowed to talk about in public? And that brings us to our next subject, which is David Gregory. David
Gregory, and he's had some therapy.
Yeah.
People come in.
Brand
try to
therapy.
Find out why all of his money that he's making isn't translating into great ratings for his show.
It's very sad. It's very, very sad. Apparently, the NBC brought in a shrink, a brand expert, to talk to his close circle of friends. I assume
and
that was
family,
be,
too.
And family. Yeah. It was some sort of, I don't know, rating intervention. I have a picture. I just picture them interviewing Grumman and Boeing. It was such a nice young man. We don't know what happened to him.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
It's fine. He's doing a great job. We think he's doing great. But, you know, this is one of those, again, cartoonishly stupid situations.
Yeah.
Where anybody on the left could tell you exactly what's wrong with David Gregory and Meet the Press in like four sentences. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what's wrong with him is who's running the show and what constraints he's operating under.
Well, it's like I told you, they need to take out that scene from Aladdin.
Yes.
And just say, tell the truth.
Yeah, it's really that simple. But that is the terrible, terrible truth.
That's what they can't do.
They can't do that. They can't do that. Because once you start telling the truth, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
You start asking, how is it this asshole has been lying for 20 years and has a job for the New York Times? Why is this asshole in the Washington Post still have a job? Mm-hmm. How come anybody still fucking listens to George Will? Once you start that dominoes falling, you don't know where it's going to end. So it's really important you never tip the first one down.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem with that, of course, is that you've now turned the entire media, Beltway media machine, into an instrument of stasis and self-preservation. We can't talk about anything. Because the minute we start talking about anything important, bad things will happen. So it's really important that we just sort of wall ourselves off, keep hauling the same waxwork dummies out of storage every fucking week and have them just regurgitate Washington talking points over and over again in an exercise to make sure that we are as irrelevant and trivial and useless as possible. And then we get paid lots of money for that. And it turns out
Republicans will tell you.
Yes. Luke Russert says. And
that both sides are equally to blame for the fact that Negroes don't know how to pick cotton.
Uh-huh. Well, and apparently it's gotten so bad that even Republico or Politico, as
Politico, Republico.
Charlie Pierce calls the Tiger Beat on the Potomac.
Yes.
Is now sitting Shiva. The Sunday shows. Suddenly someone's noticed that everyone on these shows is dead. And they are just reanimated zombies who just blah, 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 the same bullshit that you and I have been talking about on our blogs for 10 years.
Well, see, that is what gives me hope, is you will not find anyone anymore. I have noticed this in Springfield. You won't find anyone in Springfield that I've been able to see in the past 6 months wearing Duck Dynasty shit.
Yeah.
They used to.
Well,
they did before he opened his mouth and said the racist shit that he said.
Hunting season has started, so.
You might know.
You might.
I don't think so. I think it's in the bargain bin. And I had an experience this week.
Really?
On Facebook.
Really?
With a high school student who was responding in a very nasty dog whistle way that she clearly had been taught to do. Michelle Obama is going to speak at one high school for graduation.
Right.
And that high school is in Kansas, and she's going to be speaking on Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka.
Yes. Kind of important.
Kind of important and kind of local. Kind of that's where it is. That's where it happened.
It's like going to Kitty Hawk to talk about aircraft.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, one of the problems is she is reminding Topeka of their bad history.
Yeah.
Even though she's clearly going to give an onward and upward, we are all learning together, isn't this wonderful?
Yeah.
Kind of commencement address. The grievance that they have decided to have about this is that because the First Lady is coming and their security concerns, ahem, they are combining the graduation ceremonies of 5 high schools, which they have not done before, and limiting the number of tickets that each family can have.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think on Facebook that you were depriving the mother of the bride from attending her daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
It really is. Oh, my God, this is so important to the family.
Uh-huh.
Grandmothers are traveling thousands of miles to come and watch. You know, my Mima is traveling at the cost of thousands of dollars to come and see me graduate.
And you're ruining it.
You're ruining it.
Yeah. With your blackety blackness.
Well, and that's it. And then this person that I accosted by name, uh-huh. and I have to say I was careful what I said because it's on Facebook.
Yes.
But
I have heard of Facebook.
Yeah. Her point was, I don't have respect is earned. And Michelle Obama hasn't earned my respect at all. She's just a wife who shoves things down other people's throats.
Yeah. You know what her 2 big issues are? 3 big issues are?
Go gay without dip.
No, her 3 big issues are, and these are all hugely controversial. Military families should be better treated.
Families.
You should drink more water and try getting out for a walk. Those are the 3 issues that are obvious.
School lunches. She's ruined school lunches for everybody also. And this girl who said, I respect my dad and my grandfather, and I don't respect Michelle Obama because she hasn't earned it.
Right. Okay.
I, by name, addressed her comments and said, and she said, you know, Michelle Obama's just a wife.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no, actually, she's a lawyer. And she went from a lower middle class family, where her dad was a postal worker and her mother worked at Sears.
Yep.
And in a minimum wage job, and she worked hard and went to Princeton and Harvard Law School.
Uh-huh.
And then she went to work in the public service to raise money for children's activities in Chicago. And her record for raising money for those causes, she held the record for 12 years after she left. She worked really, really hard at what she did. And then when her husband became president of the United States, she sacrificed her career to help him present his family, raise his daughters. And I said to her, this is beneath you to say this because you will be a wife one day and you will make sacrifices for your family. And I didn't get into whether it'll be same-sex marriage or not.
Did you attach a picture of Nancy Reagan sitting on Mr. T's lap?
Respect.
Just say no.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
But what happened as a result of my saying that, and I also said to her something to the effect of, you're better than this. You're better than writing this kind of stuff. She deleted all her comments about respect, and she went full concern troll for the families who are missing out on graduation because Michelle Obama's coming.
Yes, it's for the children, really. Have you thought about the children?
Everybody thinks this is about race. It isn't. It's about the families having an opportunity to celebrate their graduates.
Yes, without this black woman looking at them, glowering.
I looked at that as a victory.
Okay.
Because she was called on it, and some kernel inside her brain said, yeah, I should delete these comments.
I should more deeply encode my comments.
Right.
So they can slide under the radar more successfully.
Well, and that's what I find. When she doubled down, said, you know, Michelle Obama shoves things down people's throats. I said, okay, you've shown everybody who you are. Congratulations.
Uh-huh.
And that's when her comments got deleted because she, you know, reading them, she realized, oh, wow, maybe I want to hide all of this racism and not show this to the world on Facebook. Yeah, maybe you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small victory and not a final victory.
No.
But we've got to fight. And those of us who have access to technology and every word in the English language have to fight. And it is going to get uncomfortable.
Yes.
I guess that's my point. I know this is going to get uncomfortable at church.
Yeah.
And I'm to the point where I don't care anymore. I just don't care.
Well,
I have to walk out.
there, I mean, you have to keep pushing on the wall till the wall comes down.
And it
seems absolutely unbreachable until it starts to crack, and then you realize it's because what we know is this: the entire structure is rotted from within.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's no way to sustain this energy, this sort of manic, hateful energy forever. Eventually, you know, you get tired. You end up being 80 years old. That's pretty much what the median age is of Bill O'Reilly's viewers.
Mm-hmm.
You end up being Rush Limbaugh with thousands of sponsors being pulled off, and you have to have essentially the Koch brothers write you checks to keep you on the air.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the places where it is clear that this bubble, there is this big concrete bubble that keeps us from having this national conversation, that is dedicated to keeping us from having this national conversation, because the consequences of having this conversation are so professionally disastrous for people in the media, they don't want to talk about it, is the Sunday shows. Like I said, the Politico has announced that interviewed political veterans, congressional aides, former administration officials, and longtime journalists all attest the Sunday show's decline.
Mm-hmm.
Programs are no longer the agenda-setting platforms of days past, they said. Instead, the broadcasts have become a venue for lawmakers to push familiar talking points and for talking heads to exchange conventional wisdom. That's it. Of course, the people who adamantly disagree with that, David Gregory.
Talking heads.
David Gregory says, no, we're relevant.
No, it's a good paycheck.
I swear to God.
That Sunday show dollar is a good dollar.
But I will take my victories where I can find them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to keep pushing on the, you know, this was taking on this stupid Sunday morning program lineup, which is basically our only national public square where we talk about things, has been a long-term project for liberals forever.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you start seeing critiques of them cropping up in major magazines. So eventually people start catching on, or people start catching up, or people start saying things. The thing that drives me crazy, I have to say, I have to do a little Andrew Sullivan dance here. So if you'd like to talk about something else before I get into this, I think
I just want to thank Charlie Pierce for saying that you're a better blogger than he is.
Oh, well, you know.
He did say that.
He did.
I'm not making that up.
He did. He didn't say it the print version, but, you know.
Better bloggers than I have written about David Brooks for many, many years. And he said that. And that's very sweet of him.
And it was,
and it happens to be true.
And it was another terrible. And there's part of it is part of it is that that's simply true. And part of it is that just being one of the three bloggers of the universe who push and push and push at this, who I consider to be the worst person in American punditry, the most dangerous, the most.
Well, and then he did the whole manhood thing.
Yeah.
This is about Barack Obama's manhood in the Middle East.
And if you take just a single David Brooks column without any context at all, you can find things that are like, oh, that's sure. I understand. I can agree with that. That's, but when you realize how completely he jettisons his beliefs on a regular basis, when he completely abandons, runs away like a coward from things he just said and never mentions that what I'm writing today directly contradicts what I wrote a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And no one around him mentions it either. They keep just lauding him as a wise, as a sage, as the peak of journalistic integrity and wisdom. And I'm sitting there just going through the stuff he's written going, shit, man, anybody could be matching up what he said today with what he said a month ago and noticing that he's a fucking liar. And I don't mind people reversing their positions. I mind them pretending they never had those positions.
Right. I never wrote that.
I mind them making their professional bones on their earlier held position, and then when the wind shifts, completely reversing themselves. And the best example of that I can think of, and this is why I have to talk a little bit about Andrew Sullivan. Andrew Sullivan is in the middle of a big pissy fit, a big tantrum over marriage equality. Why is he angry about marriage equality, you ask? Well, let me tell you. He's angry because the person who just wrote a book about marriage equality, sort of the history of the struggle for marriage equality, completely left out Andrew Sullivan. Now, Andrew Sullivan, to his credit, has been a part of that movement for decades. Now, see if this any of this sounds familiar to you. Andrew Sullivan has been part of a movement for marriage equality, according to him, and I take his word for decades. Back when it was a lonely struggle against impossible odds and people didn't take you seriously and you were an outsider, blah, 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 blah. Now that the push for marriage equality has become gained a lot of momentum, And there are many states where it is now a matter of law. And it looks like it's just a matter of time before it becomes sort of the norm in the country. Now that the victory is within sight, the person who wrote the book basically took the top three or four people who jumped into this struggle in the last few years and made them the heroes. She completely ignored all the work everyone had done for decades and just took the Johnny-come-latelys who had been against marriage equality for a long, long time and had reversed themselves into the 11th hour and made them into the George Washington and Thomas Jefferson of the movement. And it infuriates Andrew Sullivan that all the people who had been right all along weren't getting the fucking credit they deserved, and that only people who have media and celebrity access, who had been completely against all this shit all along until the 11th hour, they were getting the plaudits, and the hardworking bean field hands who had been there all along were being written out of history, were being declared invisible.
He does still call himself a blogger, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that is his source of great indignation. And I just want to slap the shit out of him verbally.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to get on stage with him for 2 minutes and say, you know what? What you are describing is the history of liberalism and your treatment of liberals for the last two decades.
Yep.
You have been doing this. And you know what? He very conveniently did a post just a couple of days ago in which he describes, see if this sounds familiar. I'm going to read this without attribution, without mentioning who he's talking about.
Okay.
And this is Andrew Sullivan writing as himself, citing a video that he has just played on his site. Okay. What the GOP needs is an honest, stringent account of how it ended up where it is. A party that has piled up more debt than once was thought imaginable until recently and has done nothing much to curtail federal spending. Reagan was a great president in many ways, but Reagan introduced something truly poisonous into American conservatism. It was the notion that you can eat your cake and have it too, that tax cuts pay for themselves, and the deficits don't matter. This isn't and wasn't conservatism. Bullshit, Andrew. This has always been conservatism. It was a loopy, utopian denial of math, and the damage it has done to this country's fiscal standing has been deep and permanent. It is one of modern conservatism's cardinal sins. And what we desperately need on the right is an accounting of some kind. People need to be held responsible for this sort of thing. Sounds like any liberal bloggers you've ever heard of? you know who he's applauding for his bravery?
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul.
Of course he is.
Who discovered that Reagan had done things that a lot of conservatives, I believe in 2008, he discovered that Reagan had been, and all of the video of him that David Corn has unearthed is from 2008, 2009, you know, well into the post-Bush years, well into the, and it's all true, but the idea that let us all pause for a moment and salute Rand fucking Paul for bravely mentioning out loud and in public that Reagan's legacy, Reagan's legend is a lie.
Yeah.
And you know what we should do more of? We should have more of this. We should have more people talking about holding the GOP accountable because they've done terrible things to the truth. And it's high time someone stood up. Except, of course, liberals have been
Digby?
Like liberals who've been doing this for 30 fucking years. Liberals going back to the print age. Liberals going back to Rod Serling. Yeah. Liberals going back to Harlan Ellison in the 80s have been writing about exactly this thing. And we, very much like the early proponents of marriage equality, have been written out of Andrew Sullivan's understanding. Andrew Sullivan's the only liberal Andrew Sullivan ever mentions is Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
And the only time he ever mentions him is to ask for him to be fired. And then once he's fired, he gets all weepy because one of his heroes just got fired for saying anti-gay things. And he thinks it's a terrible thing. You should threaten someone's job just for stuff they say. It is astonishing to me that someone this cowardly and deeply hypocritical isn't called out on a regular basis. But that's, I suppose, why Andrew Sullivan doesn't have a comment section.
Yes.
Because it'd be full of people like me going, wait a minute, asshole. Here's what you said a month ago. Here's what you said a year ago. Here's what liberals have been saying for 30 years. How can you possibly live with yourself? Knowing that this degree of dishonesty, how can you get indignant about people rewriting history when that's what you do every goddamn day? Anyway, that's my little rant about Andrew Sullivan.
That's so true. We want to congratulate Digby on winning a Hillman Award.
Yes.
Congratulations. He's terrific.
Way to go, Digby.
And we also want to thank Don for sending us, listener Don from Maryland, sent us a copy of Invasion of the Saucer Men.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to read, to watch this.
Yes.
An alien spaceship lands in the woods. A teenage couple, Johnny and Joan, accidentally run down one of the aliens. A drunken opportunist named Joe Gruen, played by Frank Gorshin, discovers the alien corpse and plans to keep it in his refrigerator. But the aliens arrive and kill him. Spoiler.
Yeah. Damn it.
After reporting their close encounter, Johnny and Joan return with the sheriff, only to find Joe's body in place of the aliens. And they are charged with manslaughter. But the teenagers save the day when they learn that the aliens can't stand the glare from their car headlights. Oh,
wow.
My goodness.
So it's
1957.
It sounds suspiciously like Invasion from Mars.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson, where their heads explode from music.
It sounds
music.
Like a really cheap, amazingly bad movie.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful.
Really good.
The very best of Scooby-Doo meets... But these kids solved the crime themselves.
Yeah. Teenagers versus the Saucer Men. It actually says that on the poster.
And the aliens would have gotten away with it, too. If it
the night the world nearly ended.
Yeah.
See the disembodied hand that crawls. See Earth attacked by flying saucers. Anyway, Don apparently saw this movie when he was a teenager.
Uh-huh.
He says, I first saw this movie as a young boy, on late night TV in the early 60s. At the time, it scared the crap out of me and made me a science fiction lover forever. I hope you and your family get a kick out of this classic 50s B movie. 1957 Invasion of the Saucer Men. Dodo. Thank you, Don. We really appreciate your thinking of us in that way.
Thank you very much, Don.
And thank you to those of you who have contributed to our podcast. April and May tend to be very low times for correspondence, donations, and readership of blogs. Everyone goes out to their garden. Everyone goes outside. Yeah. So if you want extra attention...
Yes.
You're one of those people who likes to have your birthday not on Christmas, right?
Yeah.
This is a good time to write to us. This is a great time to let us know what you're thinking. Show us your appreciation for the podcast. We thank everyone who supports us. About 1% of you actually donate to the podcast, and we appreciate you so much. Thank you.
And for those of you who are strapped, military, what have you, or just can't right now, don't kick yourself.
No, don't kick
yourself.
Believe
me, we understand that. I've let my blog go quiet for a few days because I've been on a couple of writing projects.
Writing projects that actually pay money.
Yes. Well, one is on spec, sort of. Yeah. I hope. I have my fingers crossed. One will actually pay money. It's because the people who hired me are slammed. They have absolutely no one who can handle the complexity and depth of the job they need done in a very short period of time. So I have been literally cranking away on, this 10 hours a day. And of course, the deadline has come and gone and things got scrambled and there's a new deadline. So it's sort of like every other writing project I've ever had. But also in the middle of that, it's allergy season. And we both woke up today and I don't have a cold, but oh my goodness, my head is full. So I appreciate you indulging my sinusy voice today. And I apologize to all those good people out there who have written me and corresponded to me over the last week or so. I've just been amazingly busy, and some small fraction of the things I'm busy on will actually pay me some real money, a small amount of real money.
Amazing.
Which is a wonderful news.
Very excited.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about the death of net neutrality before we end.
Yes.
Net neutrality is dead.
Yep.
And
Bridgeport killed it today. Pull the plug on it.
And so we don't have any access to the fast lane.
No.
In the web. No. Someone wrote to us this morning. Will professional app downloaders have special access to the fast lane?
No.
No.
No. Get used to dial-up modems again. I'm sorry. I cannot live with porn at that speed anymore.
I'm waiting for the pixels.
Uh-huh.
Don't get me started.
I can't watch Game of Thrones like this.
I can't watch Game of Thrones with one titty at a time.
No, come on.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Mocha, and she's beautiful. She belongs to the host of the Sea Realm podcast, where you had an interview.
Oh, I did, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
KMO. So this is KMO's cat.
Oh, cool.
Mocha. Yeah. And so we welcome Mocha as Internet Kitty of the Week this week.
Is that Paola? Is that considered Paola?
I don't think so. And internet kittydom is a office which has no price.
Yeah.
It's of infinite value, but has no price. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the internet kitties want you to know that they managed to avoid making racist comments with no media training whatsoever.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Yes, apparently they somehow managed not to offend large swaths of people and say incredibly stupid racist shit without having to go through the Dana Lash school of please don't say that out loud.
We have this thing called a dog whistle.
Here, just when you feel that urge coming on, just blow on this. Just blow on this, and welfare will come out.
Dana Lash.
Yeah.
What a piece of work.
There's a piece of work. I wonder what next time they're going to have her back
job.
On.
That's her job.
Hey, Dana Lash has been on This Week. Have you?
I know.
Michelle Malkin's been on This Week. Have you? No. Because they're better than us, Blue Gal. Let's face it. They're just better.
It's her job.
Yes. It's her job.
All right, darling.
All right, baby.
Thanks so much.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye.